Oh, now we're live. On this episode of the Danny Morrell Show, I've got a special guest, Jesse Rodriguez, star of HGTV's The Vintage Flip, and
look,
real guys here.
Yeah.
Let's get started. Hey friends, how are you? Welcome to another edition of the Danny Morrell Show. I've got a special guest with me. And actually, this is kind of special because this is the first time you're seeing me not in a suit. I'm just doing my thing. I'm in jeans, I'm in a nice comfortable shirt. We're here in the backyard right now at Hacienda Morrell. Just really want to just kind of change things up a little bit and show you just different views of a day in the life of a superstar like this guy. Before I introduce you to our guest today, I want to let you know that we've spent the entire day today literally filming the day. From the first moment in the office to coaching calls that I've had to a talk that I did for one of our offices, and so much fire. Cruz, would you agree? And Cruz is gonna be busy putting it all together, and that'll be an episode that we upload to YouTube here very shortly. So I'm excited about that because you guys are gonna really start seeing some different angles on what we do on a day-to-day basis. So I met Jesse, how long ago?
2009 or 10?
2009, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's been a while, almost 10 years.
It's been a while, right? That's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is nuts. And I met him because, you know, like attracts like. And I'll tell you that Jesse's a winner, and I like being around winners, and I'm attracted to winners. And I remember that at the time, the market was doing kind of bad.
It was really bad. It was the Great Recession.
Yeah, it was the Great Recession. And Jesse was kicking ass. At the time, he was selling like 300 homes a year.
That always sounds bad.
But that's okay,
like,
you were
like,
doing
like
it.
Like the world was bad. I was doing really good.
But you were. Yeah. And you know, that's the good thing, guys, is that you figured out a way to win when a lot of people weren't winning.
Yeah.
Right? And then you kind of parlayed that success. And you know, I'm happy to say that we built a really awesome relationship and that we started really trusting each other,
yeah,
and bouncing ideas off of each other. And now you're on TV, on HGTV. So let me introduce you to my friend before we get carried away, Mr. Jesse Rodriguez. Jesse, say hello.
What's up, everybody? How you doing?
So, by the way, I love the shirt.
Thank you.
Tell me about the shirt.
So it's Cal American Homes. It's my company. It's our little logo.
Okay.
You know, just it's the North Star because that's the guiding light, right?
Yep.
That's where we're always going to know where we are.
Yep.
What we're centered with, the C and the A for Cal American, but also California.
Right.
Because it's where we are.
Right.
And then this double is the little logo down here. It's supposed to be like a roof line with the shingles and then like the keyhole kind of for the door.
To the house.
To the house, but it also kind of looks like waves for the beach.
Yes.
So
it's all of the above.
It's just like, it was like this creative play on like, we got real fancy with it,
So you could tell already by the hand movements and the logo, Jesse's an expressive. You could tell that.
Definitely.
That's why we get along so well.
My eyes
will
be closed the whole time.
Yes,
I'm like so into everything, you know.
So Jesse, let's start with some basics.
Okay.
How long have you been in business or self-employed?
Since 2001.
Since 2001. And how old were you at that time?
19 years old.
So from the beginning?
From the beginning.
Like me?
Yes.
So you don't know any other way?
I completely lost any other way.
Really?
Could never work for somebody, I don't think.
I don't think either. I don't see you as that type.
It's definitely a control freak. You know, I like to do it my way.
Right.
You know, I give people power. I do empower the people around me to make decisions and learn from them. But it's definitely, I want to have my office. I want to run my company. You know, I am an entrepreneur. I am independent. I'm self-employed.
Period.
You know,
end of story.
When the market crashed, there was like the transition that so many people had to make the decision of where they're going to go in their life.
Right.
You know, and I had those sit downs with family and with friends and like, do I get a job? Do I try to do this? You know, and it was almost like you took the fire from me.
Yeah.
If I was going to have to go work for someone else. I mean, I'll do whatever it takes to survive.
Yes.
In the meantime.
Yes.
But you were not going to take away my drive to be independent and try to run a company and a business.
And so we're all wired differently.
Yeah.
Right? We're all wired differently. There's people that are wired to be that way. There's people that are wired to not be that way.
Sure.
You know, I guess the question is for everybody watching, you know, let's start off with this, man. For somebody that's been an entrepreneur since 19. Give me some characteristics of an entrepreneur. So that somebody that wants to become an entrepreneur must have.
Self-motivated.
Period. End of story.
End of story. I mean,
so nobody has to tell you to get up. Nobody has to tell you to get into the office.
No. I mean, if you're just goofing off all day long, I mean, maybe you don't have it. Like, I mean, I wake up, first thought in my mind is, how am I making money today? How am I gonna you know, create some sort of wealth? How am I going to make moves? Like, and I do the best when my back's against the wall. So I feel like that's the second thing. It's like, you push me, I'm going to push back. Pressure, I love the pressure. You know, it makes me want to push harder. You know, and I think independence is truly something that I really like. You know, when most people think you're self-employed, it means, you know, you do whatever you want, you know, you just go on vacation, and this, I mean, you work 10 times as hard, actually, as somebody else who's not self-employed, but you have the independence to make the choices of when you do want to do something and not want to do something.
Yeah, fair enough.
But the most successful?
Right.
Choose
still
to work
right,
during
right,
all those right, those hours, right?
Right, exactly.
And you're not rolling in the office at 9:30, 10:30, 11, like, I'm going to start my day. No, it's just... You know, that doesn't happen. The day starts at whatever time you wake up and you grab your phone off your nightstand and you start going at the exact moment.
It's funny you said that, because last night I got home and I didn't stop working till 11.
Yeah.
And yet I've never, you know, Gary Vee is on my mind right now.
Sure.
He's on my mind right now because we obviously just had him at Relentless.
An amazing event.
Yeah. I thank you for saying that.
Yeah, man. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. More on that in a second. What'd you learn from Relentless? Because you know what's cool, dude, is that you were in the front row, and I saw you taking notes.
Of course.
Like, you were a student of the game, basically.
So, and I'm glad you noticed it, because sometimes I want, like, that's just innate in me. Like, now I have a TV show, I think most people would think, okay, here comes the ego.
Right.
Right? Here's the super, oh, he's gonna, you know, show up late and be disrespectful.
Right.
I was, and I'd love to know where I was on the list of who bought the ticket. Like, what order did I buy a ticket? Like, I have to feel like I must have been one of the first ones.
I think, I remember you reached out to me right away.
Right away.
And you were one of the first ones to buy that front row seat.
So it was like, so when you booked Gary Vee, I was like, oh, I'm going to this.
Right.
You know, and being that we're...
So what you're saying is, if it was just me, you wouldn't have gone. That's what you're saying.
No, of course. I was already pre-booked for that before. but you know, there's so many people in this industry or in any industry. When you take two maybe top-level guys like we are in the same industry, you don't usually get like a connection between
the two.
There's a competition.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go because I don't want to support Danny.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the exact opposite. I'm like, if Danny... had the wherewithal to book something like this and invest this kind of money.
You could have,
like,
said the balls.
I wasn't sure if I could.
Just say the balls.
I was going to say the wealth.
Yes, I have the balls.
Let's go
anyway, so you might as well say it.
Yeah, like, really to have the balls to say, I'm going to pony up a lot of money.
Right.
And have the vision to try to, like, you know, knock something out of the park like this is just insane. So I was like, I'm going to go to this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be the first one there. And when I showed up, I went straight to my notepad because I'm like, am I going to be too cool to take these notes?
No.
It's like, come on. I mean, there's just too much information that's coming at me right now. And I think that goes back to, like, another characteristic. You know, it's like, I'm not too cool for school.
Absolutely.
Like, if I dropped X amount of dollars to show up to something, I want to get my money's worth.
Well, the fact that you even dropped X amount of dollars shows that.
Yeah.
Right. It's a constant game of learning.
Always.
It's so funny you bring this up. Earlier, I was in the car, and I was telling everybody, it boggles my mind. This morning, I was learning from a new coach. A new topic, something that I don't know too much about. And I kind of let them in a little bit to see that. And I realized in that moment that it's him, Mike, Gary, Taki now. And Kara, my health coach. I have five coaches in my life.
Yeah.
Five coaches in my life that I'm paying money for, right?
Yeah.
To help me grow. And it boggles my mind that people that are accomplishing a quarter of what I accomplished don't have one.
Yeah, or they question why you even would.
Exactly, right?
I mean, I have three.
There you go.
I have three to this day.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's because there's always someone that knows more than us.
Heck yeah, dude.
You know, and it's not always related to, are they, you know, do they make more money? Or, you know, there's, I mean, some of the people that don't make the most amount of money are the best teachers in the world, right? I mean, we look at, like, our industry of education, you know? Teachers don't get paid enough for what they're worth.
Right.
But yet, that's who we learn from, right?
Right.
It's the same thing in our business when we try to go find a mentor or a coach, someone who's going to train us in mindset. I mean, you know, you look at Grover, who you brought last year to Relentless.
Right.
Right? Like, he was the mindset coach for athletes.
Right.
You know, you're thinking, does Jordan need a... Well, I didn't know Jordan needed a mindset coach.
Right.
Or Kobe needed a mindset
coach. That's who makes them who they are.
Exactly.
Lauren, go live in movement, please.
Yeah. You know, so everybody thinks it's you know, Jordan is just Jordan or Kobe's... No, man, they are insecure at that end of the game, too. They're questioning why they took that shot. Maybe they should have made the pass, right?
Right.
And they have to have that other person that comes back in and says, you know, you went with your gut and your gut was right.
Absolutely.
It's not always going to work out.
Absolutely.
You know, don't ever question yourself and you go up and you take that shot again next time.
I love it.
You know, and things like that.
I love it.
And I'm with you that it bothers me when people don't see the value
right.
in that, or don't go to like trade organizations of their business, the right. conferences, the seminars.
But you know, learn. But you know what's a trip, Jesse? But they do go to the bullshit.
Okay. Like, what do you mean?
Like, they do go to the places where you walk around with a bag and collect the little goodies.
The expo.
The expo.
Like the expo hall.
It's like I've never been to one of those in
balls.
My life.
But you get all the stress balls.
I mean, like, it's so incredible to me. And then they wonder why they get smoked at production, they get smoked at income, they get smoked at abundance.
Yeah.
They get, and then they wonder why you're on TV.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then they wonder why. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's just, what does it's he so have? Incredible. Why does he have a
right,
show?
Right. Exactly.
You know, and it's. I know. It's just how it's always been, I guess, right? But the ones that keep learning are the ones that are going to keep growing.
I love it. So here's my next question. So you went into business at 19.
19. I was in college.
You were in college?
So I was in college, and I was in a fraternity in college, and a couple of the older, you know, like guys that graduated 2-3 years already were out in the jobs, were doing loans.
Right.
And they came to an event, and they were looking for loan officers, especially Spanish-speaking.
Right.
I said, I already had a semi-full-time job while going to school full-time at 19,
right.
and said, I will go at night now
right.
and cold call for them from after my other job. So from 7 to 10 o'clock at night, I would take their leads, and I would just call. It's funny, because the guy that got me in the business popped by my office yesterday. I haven't seen him probably in 5 or 6 years. And I was joking and walking him around all my agents and stuff, and I was saying, Mark, what was my split when I worked for you?
Uh-huh.
When I had a fire and I was working a second job to try right. to learn this industry, I was on a 25% split. 25% split. And he's
right.
laughing, right?
Because, right.
you know, these days you can't get,
no.
you offer 50% and you're a criminal,
you're
essentially,
a crook.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I looked at it as like, this is my education.
Yeah.
This is what I'm like,
absolutely,
you're going to pay me to teach me how to like do loans,
dude,
so I can make money?
You're just, it's incredible to me the mindset that the top people have. Because I remember I was on a 60% split selling 50 houses a year.
Yeah.
And nowadays, fuckers want like a 100% split selling 10 houses.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so, and then they wonder why they're stuck at 10, you know?
I can't even fathom like those concepts, because I experienced it too when I talk to people. But
yeah.
it's, I mean, I was on a 25% split on an in-house deal. And
uh-huh.
if I brought the deal to the table, like
right.
it wasn't even their lead, I was on a 35.
Right.
35 on an outside, and I made $150,000 my second year on a 35% split.
I love it.
So that once I, you know, upgraded myself and
well,
kind of went to the next level,
now we're talking.
It just
the income
just doubles and triples.
Right.
And
absolutely.
And so that was the start of my business. And I think a lot of that comes, like the entrepreneur side of it, is I grew up in a family where my dad's self-employed.
I was gonna ask you, did your parents? Because, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs have a tough time with that. Like, the family, it's the opposite. The family says, no, mijo, don't do it.
Oh.
So you didn't have to deal with that.
No, we did not have to deal
right.
with that. We were, you know, obviously our parents wanted us to go to college. We're first generation, right? So my mom and dad came from Cuba, and me and my 3 older brothers are first generation Americans. So college was something they wanted for us, but they didn't force either. So it wasn't the end of the world if I decided I wasn't going to,
uh-huh.
because I think my dad knew, like, well, they have work ethic. Like,
right.
they are going to push hard. So when it decided that I wanted to do loans or I wanted to start a real estate company, I mean, they were the most supportive in it, because their whole life was around, you know, coming to America, opening up a little mini market, you know, carniceria, then
right.
another one, then a second location, third location.
Very entrepreneurial.
Buying buildings.
Oh,
like,
the whole thing.
Yeah.
Wow,
I
love it.
I mean, my parents to this day, they don't have a 401k. They don't have retirement.
They are the 401k.
The commercial building that he bought 30 years ago that he
right,
paid off,
right.
that he rents out and gets 7,000 or however much a month,
right?
And then
right.
the other one that he gets 4 or 5, he's, you know, they make 10K a month
and
doing nothing, owning
good.
Real estate.
Good
you know, or
them.
Whatever the number may be that they
good
do,
them,
and it's
dude.
And it's and so that was all I knew,
right?
And that's all I wanted to do. So
right.
I was like, that was the direction I was gonna go. And
yeah.
so when I started doing it, it was just go up from there.
But you know what though, Jesse? Kudos to you, man, because you could have gone the other route,
the safe way.
Let me explain to you what I mean. Obviously, your parents probably were not like wealthy when you were growing up, but
no,
there was money. You know what I'm saying?
There was
resources.
There was hustle and heart. We never needed for anything.
Okay.
In that sense, correct, right? You know what I mean? Like, there was always food on the table, but there was definitely not the luxuries of that we're providing to our kids today.
Okay.
You know, to that level, there wasn't, you know, new Jordans
right.
All the time, but there was a mid-level Nike that it was summer and you're gonna go shopping for school, right? Like, here's $200.
Okay.
Go shop for your whole year's worth of like New Year's, you know, close.
I'm glad you clarified that, because I was gonna say, you know, a lot of people struggle when their parents do very, very well. I was just on a call with someone right now, and I was coaching him through the fact that, you know, he was mentioning, like, I don't do the work. And, you know, I've been hearing I don't do the work for like a year. And I was like, dude, I love you, bro, but you gotta realize at some point in time, you gotta stop being proud of the fact that you know you don't do the work, and you gotta start wondering why you don't do the work.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes it has to do with, like, you know, and for some people, unfortunately, when their parents are well off, you know, they don't wanna go out and hustle.
Yeah.
They don't wanna go out and make it happen. They know one way, and that's to be given everything to them.
Yeah.
So kudos to you, though. You made it happen.
I'll tell you, that's a conversation at the house that we have all the time now.
Dude, it's tough.
Is we worked, Tina and I worked so hard to get to our level, and we obviously give so much to our kids now. Are we poisoning them? Are they going to be that next generation that no longer has that drive?
Right.
That it's like, oh, I'm just going to step into mommy or daddy's company.
Right.
Or I'm going to do it's, and it's like, so, I mean, you go back to education. It's like, I'm now trying to read stuff to go, like, you know, what do I do to not mess them up by giving them too much?
Right.
You know, because basically we just do opposite of what our childhood was, right? Like, if we didn't get enough, then all of a sudden we're like, you know, I didn't get to play enough sports, so I'm going to sign you up for every thing there is.
Yes.
And you're going to have the freshest gear there is, and you're going to be like you're sponsored by Under Armour.
By the way, he did look like he was sponsored by Under Armour.
He looked tight. Like, I'm going to lie. It is like all me. Like, I can't even control myself.
Yeah,
Tina,
yeah.
Like, I have a rule. I can't go to Dick's Sporting Goods anymore.
Yeah.
Tina's like, you do not walk step foot, because I roll out like $1,000 worth of.
That's awesome.
Because when we played as kids, we were good athletes.
Dude,
we didn't have gear.
Dude, no,
it was like the same glove got handed down from the next person to the next brother to the youngest brother. You know, and now I think Carter has 7 gloves. Like, you know, already he's 6. You know, it's like.
I don't even. Yeah. Like, I feel so bad saying this, but. I feel so bad. I don't even know if I should say it. Well, I don't know how to. I don't know how to not be authentic. But, you know, I won't mention. I'll just say that for us, it was so bad. I had a family member that like knew that I wanted the new glove and went and stole the new glove from me. So I remember growing
almost
up.
Almost as good as buying.
You know what I'm saying? I remember growing up thinking that that's how you got the nice stuff.
Yeah.
But knowing it was wrong.
Yeah.
Like knowing, like, no, that ain't cool. That's
no.
not right.
No, you know, yeah.
Like, but man, you just brought back memories.
I know.
Right? Yeah, you brought back memories.
You know, and I know you grew up in Rialto. I spent, you know, better part of my childhood in Rialto and then Fontana. So we're from the same kind of neighborhood.
Right.
Of, you know, same type of kids and like environment, socioeconomic environment and stuff. And it's just, I look back, you know, you tell somebody you're from Fontana. First thing they say is Fontucky.
Right.
Right. And they think it's negative.
Right.
But my streets comes from the Fontana side.
So I'm going to ask you a question. You're an entrepreneur. You're 19 years old. At what point in time did you crack that seven-figure mark?
So did not crack the seven-figure mark until after the market crashed.
Okay.
And then I rebounded. So was doing well, well, well. And which is funny because you think, like I think back and I thought I was like top dog of the whole wide world.
Uh-huh.
Back in, you know, 03, 04, 05 making, you know, 250, 350, 400. And it was like, oh my God, I'm the biggest baller.
Right.
You know, market crashes. We lose everything. Tina and I have to short sell the house.
Right.
So, I mean, we get married May 19, 2007.
Right.
Buy like our dream home on July, you know, 10th or 7th or 2007. By December, I'm shutting the doors of my company, have nothing left.
Damn, dude, that's a lot like my story.
Moving into Tina's mom and dad's house.
That's a lot,
right?
Yeah.
My parents giving me a car because my car was repoed,
uh-huh.
right? Short selling our house by February of 2008. Like,
right.
Didn't even own the home 8 months.
Right.
And so, like, that's like rock bottom. I feel like a loser. Tina fully supports me at that point. Like,
right.
Like, the amazing part is how my family came around me and friends. And everybody was like, still, like, they just believed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, sometimes people then come in, they're like, maybe it's time to quit the job.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like, it's,
yeah, yeah.
You tried it,
right.
It was like
right.
the exact opposite. Like, my dad's like, take the car, you're gonna be fine. Tina's
right.
mom and dad are like, we know you're gonna be able to, like, this is nothing. This is
nothing.
The this is the world happening. This isn't
right.
you.
Right, this isn't you.
You know?
Right.
Same thing, brothers, you know, giving me money, stuff like that.
Right.
So, with that fire, it's like, it was not even 7 months, and I was back to, like,
you rebounded.
To the next thing. Like,
okay,
you know,
okay,
like,
okay, okay.
It was the, I had the pity. Like, I had the little bit of like, oh, okay, what am I going to do? I'm down on myself, right? For a half second,
right.
you know, right? 10 days
right.
of like, oh, I don't know, maybe I need to go do this. And then it's like, wait a second, this isn't me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to stick my head in the sand.
Right.
I'm going to fight back. And that's what I'm like, so instantly I go into research, like, who's making money in our industry?
And how?
And how? And I'm like, just like plotting it out.
Right.
You know, and it's REO agents. I'm because, like, what's an REO agent?
Because you know what, dude? And this is one thing I want you all to understand. Everybody watching, anything someone else can do, you can figure out a way to do it as well.
100%.
100%.
I mean, I was a loan officer for seven, I got chills actually.
Yeah.
When you said that.
Yeah.
So for 7 years, I was a loan guy. Uh-huh. I never sold a house, except for the one I may have bought for myself two or three times over, right?
Right.
Then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, who's making money? It's not loan comp guys, right? The mortgage industry was just devastated. Everybody was shutting down.
Right.
So I look over and there's this handful of realtors that are selling REOs, you know, foreclosures for banks. I go, I'm gonna go do that.
Yeah.
So I literally Googled how to become REO agent. I mean, this was crazy. People don't believe this stuff. How to become REO agent. You start getting all those links and I start clicking them. They're like, BPOs, learn how to do BPOs, you know, forums. And I'm spending every night just doing research and I buy the BPO list.
Right.
You know, that probably is a scam.
Right.
Right. And I signed up for every single bank that they put on there and just hit it and hit it. And a few months later, literally got my first listing the market was, there were so many REOs, they needed agents and the agents weren't even catching on yet that this was the business. So then I'm doing it. I've never even sold a house. Like, I don't just have to learn REO. I got to learn real estate. Like, I was a loan guy. Like, you know what I mean? It's completely opposite.
I never knew that about you.
Yeah. So it's like, you get this email. It's like, here's a listing for you, a new assignment. And I'm like, awesome. Let me go learn what I have to do for the bank to, like, you know, fulfill their requirements. Now, let me go see how I sell this home.
Right.
So the funny story is for, like, the first 6 months, I had a bunch of listings coming in, and I never sold one because I really didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
So I just kept kind of, like, I had the mentality of, like, a squirrel. I was like, just keep collecting them.
Yeah.
And someday they're gonna sell.
Right.
Like, someday it's going to get cheap enough that I could just,
right,
like, someone's going to go, like, that's such a good price. Let me walk you through how you do this. Like,
right,
you know.
Right.
And eventually, a few months down the line, it just started
popping.
It just started happening. And from there, all of a sudden, it went from rock bottom to, you know, hey, 20-some listings 1 year, 100 listings the next year, to 300 listings. So I would say it was probably a couple years down the line. I think more than making the first seven figure, like, that wasn't a milestone to me. It was the first month I made six.
Hmm.
Was like, you know what I mean? Because, like, you got to wait.
So six figures in 1 month.
Yeah. So you got to wait the whole year for the seven.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, but it was like that month. I remember a friend saying, have you made $100,000 in a month yet?
Yeah.
I said, no, it was another REO agent.
By the way, whoever that friend is, God bless them.
Because they put it in my mind.
They put it in your mind.
I didn't even know it was possible.
Yes. That's the whole thing, people.
Danny, it happened maybe 2 months after she said it.
That's exactly how it happens.
I was like, what do you mean $100,000? She goes, oh, yeah, well, just wait till you have your first $100,000 month.
Yeah.
And it's Erica, by the way. I love you.
Thank you, Erica.
Yes. And so when she said that, literally 2 months later, I broke, it was like 104,000. And I was like, oh my God.
It happened.
And then it was like 3 months later, it happened again. And then eventually, it was every month.
Right.
And then it was like, can I hit $200,000 in this month?
Now? Right.
Like, it just, like,
absolutely.
That became,
absolutely.
And it was just game over.
I'm asking you this question because I find myself spending a lot of time, and you kind of felt it a little at Relentless. People have a very difficult time with the psychology of money.
Yeah.
The psychology of being able to earn more. And that limits their business.
Yeah.
What got your business to grow was that you said, oh my God, six, now what if I could do it? What if I could,
yeah,
right?
Repeat.
And people hit something and then they back down.
Yeah.
Is that a normal thing for you, or?
No.
Did you have to work on it, or?
You mean to just continue to have the fire?
Yeah.
To continue
to have the fire and to accept what you're worth and what is possible for your business.
That's a good question. You know, I don't even know how, like, where, okay, like, where did that, I mean, probably deep rooted in my dad.
Okay.
You know, like, he's always been someone, like, you're not going to tell him, like, and I hope my dad doesn't see this, the joke of, like, my brothers is, like, never seen a person who can get a better deal. Like, he is the master of, like, will buy it from you with your money, own it, you'll be happy and smiling and leaving. Like, it was like the, like, it was, you know, they would say, like, a real partnership or real deal, these both parties need to walk away happy.
Right.
Or something. Well, somehow they both walk away happy.
Yeah, but your dad
he got all one side of it, and he was just like, and it's like the man, right?
Yeah.
So I think it was maybe probably ingrained from him to us that, like, you always fight, you always compete, you always win, and there's just no complacency, like,
yeah,
you know, and I'm not trying to, like, I'm not superhuman. I mean, I get weak at times, yeah, too, right? Like anybody else, or tired. Like, after the REO run, I was tired.
Yeah.
I kind of started getting a little bitter and resentful towards the banks and the abuse and how much it was, right? And you start doing, then you do sabotage. I did self-sabotage a little bit where I was like, oh, I deserve this. I don't want to do that. I don't want, you know, and but it happens for a moment for me only.
Yeah.
And then I shake it off. It's like I need to say it. So that I can go like, that was dumb.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Like,
get it out
like,
of the way.
Okay, all right, now let's go do it again, you know?
Right, I got it. And so, okay, well, that was good. I'm glad everybody heard that. By the way, for those of you watching the recording, go to Facebook. Go to facebook.com/groups/The Relentless Movement. It's essentially a group where we're continuing the conversation that we had about possibility at our event, Relentless. And I'm only streaming live there right now. So, guys, if you're out there and you got a question for Jesse, make sure to get it ready because we want to get those answered, okay? So I guess here's my last question.
Okay.
And then we'll go to the audience that's watching, okay? How did you parlay all of that into TV?
So I have this concept of stay nimble.
Stay nimble.
Stay nimble. Be fluid. You know, because after the market crashed, and it was like, I was so into this, I didn't even see it coming. I was so blindsided that when I started doing the REO thing, I started making moves in REO out of REO 2 years probably before someone else did.
You started making moves out of REO 2 years before
before anybody else did, because when everybody else is doing it, it's because the market told us we had to.
It's already too late.
Right, like, so there's only REO, and then all of a sudden REOs are gone, and now I gotta go be a standard sell agent, right? No, I started shifting 2 years before I needed to. Because I wanted to stay ahead of the game. Doesn't mean I always shifted right. I might have jumped on something a little too premature, or maybe I spent money over here and I could have just, you know, hoarded it and then just waited or something like that. But so I've kind of evolved from the foreclosures to then I started working with the hedge funds. I went from
disposing of assets, right?
Foreclosed REOs are the disposition of bad assets, essentially, like get them off the books for the banks.
Right.
Then we became an acquisition company. So I went from disposing to acquiring for hedge funds.
Right.
At the same time, like I was still selling the bad ones here and helping these guys buy good ones somewhere else.
Right.
Kind of a thing, and just shifting that. From there, we went into flips because as I learned to do acquisitions and help them with the remodels, then it was like, well, why don't I do this for myself?
Right.
And then that became the next thing. And then it's like, and then it made sense to like grow the office a little bit more and have more agents. So I'm always kind of moving. And like in TV now is that I fell into from a friend who had a TV show.
I remember you said that.
Right? On HGTV already. And I guest starred on an episode.
Kind of like I have a friend that has a TV show.
He has to guest star on an episode. Let me get a few more years in. So I guest starred on an episode with him and HGTV kind of. I caught their eye, Tina and I did, and they really liked our niche more than necessarily, I think, us, the fact that we're in the vintage home, you know, kind of sphere.
And was that really a niche?
It was a niche that we, I mean, it's what we love. It's our passion. Okay. You know, we live in a 1917 Craftsman home in downtown Claremont that we remodeled ourselves.
Like, got it.
We generaled it, we hired all the subs, and that's how we fell in love with old houses.
Got it.
And we did that episode, with our friend on HGTV.
Got it.
And then HGTV said, like, we like that. Like, we like the vintage that you do because there's more character in that home. You know, can you do more of that?
Right.
And it was like, I look at Tina, I'm like, can we do more of that? I'm like, how many more?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, eight. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know how I was going to do eight, but I said, oh, eight, that's all? Yeah, you got it. Yeah. Then season two, like 14. I'm like, oh, I thought you were going to say 30. Yeah. Right? And then I'm like, like, how do I, because we're in Southern California.
Where are you going to find them?
There's not a, we're not on the East Coast where every home is built in like the 1800s or 19, like early 1900s. So, but it's one of those things like I'm like, okay, that's what you need from me. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
With, so the TV thing that it's kind of, we transitioned into is like something that is going to be great for our business.
Yeah.
It's not yet, but I just know it's going to be someday.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to help our brand and the recognition.
What is that?
The skimmer. Is up on the beach.
Oh, is it really? Oh, Lauren's gonna help me with that real fast. Yeah.
Just throw it a little deeper in the pool.
Yeah, just throw it in the pool. Yeah.
I don't know it.
Just grab it and throw it. That's fine. So, and I'm so glad you mentioned that because I remember you. Then she literally just threw it.
I was like, that's like a $500 pool. Really, no, I meant like just like shove it a little bit. Don't actually throw it.
She threw my machine. I remember, we were at the Christmas party and you were saying that the show was a little bit of a struggle for you. You know, and I appreciate that about you, man, because you're so real. Like, if
Thank
things,
you.
Are, you know, you, you, which people aren't nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, people like to fake the funk, yeah. You know? And so I appreciate what you just said. You said, I know it's going to be great for my business. It's not right now, but I know it is.
No, it's, you know, the show is really, it's hard.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have my company. I have 35 other flips that I'm doing that are non-TV related. And essentially, the show takes up 100% of my time. So everyone around me, from family to my, you know, to my employees, have had to step up and kind of say, we know, like, everybody knows when I'm filming, Jesse's gone for 8 months.
Right.
Like, we're not talking 2 months. Like, 3/4 of the year,
wow.
We may not see Jesse for more than maybe 1 hour a day. I mean, and even my agents who, you know, they need leadership, right? They join our company because they want to be part of you.
Right.
They want to be part of me. And it's like, for them to even have the vision to say, we know he's only going to be gone temporarily. We're not going to leave him yet.
That's pretty cool.
Right? Like, we're going to stick with him because, like, now I'm not filming and they're getting all of Jesse. And it's like, it's makeup time. Lunches, let's hang out, let's
all
do this, let's talk business, let's grow. And we're not seeing the benefit or the reward, you know, that may come with money or fame or something with the show. But it's definitely, it's taught me one thing. If this show goes nowhere else, other than what it is that I can handle even more.
Good job.
Like, I was telling Tina, like, man, the company's run without me. I have to learn to work again and get in that office and do something. And Tina says, why?
Yeah.
It's already doing the thing. Go build something else. Right? Like, it's like, they're already doing
Good
it 8 months without
Tina.
You.
Yeah. I like you even more now. Look
yeah.
at that. Yeah.
She's like, go after something else. Like, they're already still doing their thing.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, okay, well, what's my next thing? And so I'm already 2 years on to the next before I needed to be.
Right?
Like,
I love it.
Like, into something else and diversifying and trying to expand.
I love it. All right, let's go into the group. Sound good? We're going to go into, we're actually, just because I love my Intero people, are they live? They are. So we'll answer their questions and the Relentless Movement. So what questions do we have?
Okay, we have a question from Eddie Salinas.
Oh, from Eddie Salinas.
Eddie!
I love you. He's my my bodyguard slash best friend.
Eddie says, how do you manage all the projects you have going on at one time?
You know, and by the way, that's a good question. Eddie's been a guest on our show.
Yeah.
And we have, how many? We're partners. I think we got like 30 or 40 flips going on right now. It's nuts.
That's what he told me when I saw him the other day at Relentless.
It's going
nuts. We were talking about it.
So how do you manage them?
You know, I have a good team. At first you start when you're doing one or two and you can handle it by yourself. As you grow and you're at the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, you have to have a staff, right? So I have an in-house person who orders material, right? All day long. It's ordering material. They're ordering material, they're paying bills, they're cutting checks. All of a sudden, you know, our accounts receivable and accounts payable is big. There's a lot of money coming in. There's a lot of money going out.
Right.
So there's one person's doing that. I got Mike on my team that's handling from acquisitions to running around to the houses to doing a little bit of project management. I'm doing project management on some of the houses. I have another person who's helping, who's like an assistant designer, who helps out with, you know, with Tina's going to some of the houses and designing. Sherry's going to other houses. And then I have runners, like actual field people.
Who are running around
and literally like, oh, Kat just ordered this, so let me go run to this tile
Kat's
place.
Kat's still around?
Oh, yeah.
Did she just have a baby?
Kat had a baby a little over a year and a half ago.
Good for her.
Yeah, no, actually, Layla's going to be in September, it'll be two.
Time is flying.
So almost 2 years. But Kat will place the order, and Brady will have to go to one tile company, to another tile company, to another place to pick up the material. So to manage that kind of stuff, it becomes a lot bigger than us, right?
Yeah.
So systems, right? The right spreadsheets, you know, databases, communication tools. You know, we use Slack as like our internal messaging tool instead of text messaging anymore. Because the one thing that drives me crazy with text messaging is it's not a searchable feature.
Hmm.
You can't like, where was that? How many square feet was that tile? Right. And then you hit the thing and you're like, 400 different threads pop up.
Right.
You can go into Slack and it's like a Gmail, Google type power search where it'll find that exact verbiage. You know,
and it's there,
and it takes it right to that thing, and it tracks things, and you can upload your photos, and it's, you know, it's Keynote or whatever that thing is called
mixed
into like communication tool and all that. So
gotcha.
So it's a lot of systems, a lot of organization, and a lot of trial and error.
Gotcha.
You know, failing, losing money, buying too much material missing, walking off the job, and going, okay, well let's buy a moving truck. Like that's been my newest thing is we just bought a box van.
Okay.
We've been doing so much material delivery that it made sense to actually buy our own like moving truck.
Right.
So all day long we're running stuff and then being organized and moving material.
Your contractors don't do all of the ordering of the materials. You do.
We do.
Gotcha. And why is that? Because I know he would probably want to know that.
Because if someone's not checking them, like how much material to order, they could be ordering and then taking it to a side job.
Wow.
And stealing from you, essentially, right? I mean, like when you steal from somebody, it's not just necessarily maybe going to their bank account taking money.
Right.
If you order 10 more 2x4s, you know,
and,
that are a
and
couple...
Use it to build something in your backyard.
That are a couple bucks each, right? I mean, it,
right.
You know, a box of nails is $25 or $30.
Right.
So it doesn't seem like a lot, but all of a sudden on each job, you could get ripped off for $1,000 or $2,000. And if you're doing 50 a year, there's $100,000 you just lost. You know, sometimes we try to focus on how to make more money, but spending a little bit of time in our business
right.
to fine-tune it, there's money right there that you can save, which is making more money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good questions.
And that kind of leads us into our next question from Lisa yeah. Myers. In your business, what do you do to mostly focus on bringing home the check? Do you focus on the business, or do you have a team that does that for you?
Break it down to me one more time.
Yeah. Simplify it, Lisa, a little bit.
Okay. Do you...
How do I focus on bringing home the check?
Do you focus on running the business by yourself? Are you instilling power into a team that does it for you?
Oh, empowering the team. My team has been with me. I mean, you heard Danny say, like, Kat's still with you?
Yeah.
Kat's been with me for 5.5, 6 years. Mike's been with me for 5+ years. You know, Lorraine, Karen. I mean, I have probably 10, 12 employees, and which have been with me for a very long time.
Yeah.
So a lot of that was, and I think my team would say this. At least I hope they would say this, that I try not to bite anybody's head off, so I'm not a dictator. I do empower. Make a decision. I'll never get mad at you if you make a decision and it's the wrong decision. But I will get mad at you if you're expecting me to answer everything and then I get, like I'm gonna be here for a couple hours and
right.
if I have 400 text messages that they were waiting for me,
right.
We wasted the day.
Right?
And they know when it's too high level, too big of a decision to make, but sometimes I would rather them just make the decision and then let it be a learning experience, kind of scenario at that moment, at which way we could have routed, and then over the time they start to think like you. A lot of times, if you're emailing me, Kat's emailing you back, not me anymore. You know, from my email,
absolutely
in my language, like
right.
probably even misspelling the same words that I would misspell.
Right,
that's how much she is my duplicate. But that has been time, that is years. So a lot of times people go, it's easier for me to do it myself.
Right.
I don't want to hire somebody. Oh, it's gonna take me so long to train them. It does. It takes a little while, but once you have it, you can really step out. And grow it and do other stuff.
Which benefits everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody grows. I love it.
You know?
I love it. Anybody over here? Lauren?
Yeah, we lost the question.
Oh, that sucks. Okay. How about over here?
Okay, this one's from Delia. She says to either of you two, how do you discover your next big thing, your next big business venture? I think she's asking.
I'm going to answer that.
Yeah.
By first kicking ass at the one that you're in.
Say that again?
Yeah.
By first kicking ass at the one that you're in. The question was, how do you discover your next big thing? My answer was by first kicking ass at the one that you're in.
Because too many people are looking for the next thing
and
before they've mastered the one they're in. And they're really looking, not because they're ready for the next big thing, but because they're like...
Because it's too tough.
This is too hard, so I want to go to do... Maybe this will be easier on this side. And then you're always jumping and quitting on something and you never get to really get to that next thing.
Big time. And if you listen and if you listen to the numbers that he was putting up, and if you've been following me at all and you know what we are doing, like I'm now getting serious with this.
Yeah.
Because I know it's my passion, I know it's my calling. You don't put 1,000 people in a room if that's not what you're meant to do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You're scared to talk to people.
Right, but you know, I waited and waited, quite honestly, guys, Delia, I've been wanting to do this for the last 4 years. Absolutely. Yes. Lauren, questions?
Yes. JJ is asking, what advice would you give everyone as far as getting ready for the next market shift?
Well, that was a great question.
That is a really good question,
yeah.
Because I think that's the most probably... Are you talking a lot about that now?
I have been.
Are you thinking it? You know,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I think first off, when is the next market shift? Right? That's the first one. I have my theories. Well, what are your theories? So like, I feel like a lot of it has to do with the current presidency.
Look, I think it's end of next year is what
okay.
I think. I think end of next year we're going to see something. I don't think at all it's going to look like what we just went through. What we just went through was like a once in a 50, 60 year kind of gig. I think we'll go through 3 quarters of a mild recession.
Okay.
Of a correctionary recession. But guys, to be honest with you, if you've been paying attention, we kind of go through that every single year from November through February.
Mm-hmm.
Every single year from November through February, things slow down. You know, every single year from November through February, I mean, to be quite frank, I feel it because of the amount of agents that we have in the company, and I feel their needs and their struggles, and I see it. I think you can kind of prepare for that for a good 3 to maybe 4 quarters.
Sure.
Is what I believe.
Well, all right, so to give my take on it, I think we're going to go through the presidency, however long that may last, because it seems to be like we're not sure.
Because he's not the type of guy to let something go backwards on his back.
Bingo. That is the key right there.
Yeah.
President Trump, being that he's a business person, he's an entrepreneur, and he has a high ego, is not going to let our country go into turmoil under his watch.
Right.
It could happen the day after his watch.
Right.
So he's going to hold it together, I think, any way he can. Hmm. So the question is, if it goes through his full presidency, I think we have that, at least that run. If he gets pulled out early, for one reason or another, then it could come sooner. But I really feel like it's pretty safe to say we're going to be okay at least through that, unless there's something global that happens, right? Someone's dropping a nuclear bomb in another country on somebody else.
Right.
Then
right.
That's out of our power. But that's no different than what we went through with the 9/11. Like, it's that wasn't about us. That was about, you know, another country towards us. So we couldn't control that financial market issue. So I feel like you're confident in that. But to answer the actual question, which is the longest version of this question, is to prepare is to know that something's going to be coming. Right? So the fact that you're in thinking that it could be in 1 year or it could be in 5 years means you're saving money, right? You're tightening your belt, you're, you know, which is tightening your expenses, is what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. And just being ready. Doesn't mean like, you know, you go into your turtle shell and don't want to do anything in business.
No, because there's a lot of opportunity right now.
A ton of opportunity.
And there's going to be even more opportunity whenever a correction happens.
Mm-hmm.
Jancy, I don't know if you know this, but you kind of saw this happen. You know, one of the things that we did as a company, we went from a 13,000 square foot building to an 18,000 square foot building and kept right about our same. I worked it to where expenses stayed right about the same.
Wow, that's good.
So we had a net increase of 5,000 square feet for right about the same budget that we were used to. And I did that because the way I feel is what we have to offer right now is an option.
Mm-hmm.
But when that market corrects, it will no longer be an option. I honestly believe we are going to double and quadruple when that happens.
Yeah.
I'm actually very excited about it, me personally.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're teaching in your office by teaching agents to actually how to make money.
Right.
You're teaching them how to fish.
Right.
You know what I mean? Is something unique.
Yeah.
And so you're right. When the agents have a need for that, because it's you can't just trip
no longer,
on a deal anymore,
right.
Then you only have an option to go to a place where you're going to learn fundamentals, rebuttals, you know, work ethic,
that's
you know,
it.
Action. So yes, I agree with that. I think you're going to be one of the offices that's always going to be okay.
Yeah.
You're going to hit your bumps like any one of us
yeah.
are going
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
But you're going to be all right because you have your foundation
the
is
foundation.
Poured real thick.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I think you just have to be prepared and be ready and know that it's coming. It's coming in a year and a half or it's coming in 4 years, but it's going to be coming soon. Don't be blindsided. If people are blindsided by something that's going to happen in the next 24 to
that's
36,
your
it's, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, we lived through it just a few years ago, so we should never be blindsided again.
And I'll tell you one other thing, for all of you guys that own real estate, nothing is safe unless you owe 50% or less on it.
Yes.
Nothing is safe. That's another thing. That's what caught people off guard is that, if you remember, guys, you know, don't fear the recession. I would say anticipate it, get ready for it,
embrace it.
And embrace it and get ready to grow for it. I remember everybody was losing their houses because they came in with like 2% down.
Yeah.
And it was
zero
and
down.
And then they started sucking all the equity out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now if I owned any real estate at all, my goal would be to not own anything that I owed more than 50% on it.
Yeah. I think that's a very safe rule of thumb. If you're in that
50%.
Position, you're going to be fine.
You're going to be fine.
There's a time in these cycles where you can leverage.
Right.
And you can double down.
Right.
And you can push. And
right.
those times are when the market crashes.
Right.
Because you know you're now going to be buying at lows.
At lows.
You know, and there's a lot of factors that you can look at, like, you know, the rebuild cost of a property. If you look back at 2008, 9, 10, 11, when the market was down, and you were able to buy houses here in Southern California for, you know, up in the high desert for $60,000, and in Fontana for $150,000, that's now, you know, $450,000. The big factor that the hedge funds taught me this, when Blackstone came into our market and they started buying and I was helping them, they taught us to look at you know, what's it going to cost to rebuild that home today? Mm-hmm. And if you're buying below that actual cost,
get it.
You're fine.
Right.
You're like, get that deal because the market's going to get you back.
Back up.
And, right. And we all see that in this industry, being agents, price per square foot is what essentially is what
price
I'm saying.
Price per square foot.
Right. So I know that I could build a home price per square foot of, call it $150 a square foot. The big builders are building at like $80 a square foot,
right.
Just to give you an idea. But let's say we're a smaller builder, small developer. We don't have the masses of the buying power. So we're at $150. Well, if you're out there still buying or selling houses to somebody and they're now $250, $350, $450 a square foot, you know that we've kind of, we're back up.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go back to a different shift, and it's like, I mean, you guys look on the MLS and pull sold homes in Fontana in 2009 to 2011. And go look at the price per square foot.
Price per square foot.
$55 a square foot, $61 a square foot.
Oh my.
I mean, crazy, crazy. I built my rentals that I now own today on, you know, and we're talking like in 2009, 10, and 11, where I was just starting to rebuild and just starting to like, and I was still scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, there's something that this market did for me is I still live in a little bit of fear
mm-hmm.
of what happened. And they say either you survive off of, what is it, a fear of loss
right.
or motivation to gain. Well,
right.
I work hard off fear of loss now
yeah.
because I don't want to go through those pains again. So I fight
right.
and I work hard. And I bought a $50,000 home in Victorville and a $50,000 house in Lake Elsinore that I then rolled into, you know, a few years later into a triplex, you know, here in Upland and a 6-unit in Claremont. And I kind of, you know, started far where
right.
maybe the rents weren't good and the values weren't there, but then the market increased and then I was able to push it to other areas. And now
absolutely.
It's like, you know, and I'm still trying to collect.
Yeah.
I'm still absolutely. Trying to play the game because real estate's really how we could all retire.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's by owning property.
Absolutely. Final question.
Final question, Kevin Finney, where do you find most of your flips?
So, Kevin
from San Dimas, right?
Yeah, Kevin, that's the secret sauce.
Yeah.
That's Kevin, I'm still waiting to buy a flip from you.
And I'm still waiting for you to join us. So I think that's the question. That's the question we need to ask.
So, you know, I want the big car, the big truck.
Yeah,
I want
right?
to ride in that, and then I want you to sell me a flip.
Yeah.
So I find my flips from great agents like you.
No.
So I buy flips from agents. I mean, I still buy off the MLS. Like, I don't know if people believe this or not. We search the MLS every single day looking
right.
for deals. There are still deals.
Yeah.
You know, direct mail is one way to do it. Probates, going after, you know, the courts. So I have a little system, just a small system of all those things. You know, because it's, when you're doing 50 flips a year, it's 50. It's not that big of a number.
Right.
It's not impossible to find 50 houses in a year. So I try to stay away from wholesalers, if I can give a tip. Because usually someone that's wholesaling is taking the profit,
yeah.
right, a good chunk of it, and you really have to do a value add to that property to try to increase it. So I'd be cautious of that. But the MLS to this day is still it. Because the MLS brings multiple deals. I go on there, I find the deal, you know, Danny has a listing, I call Danny, I start to get to know him, I show up at the property, I walk in with him, I shake his hand, I give him my business card, maybe I buy that one. Well, I now have Danny. Like, he's no longer an MLS agent to me now. He's now
a
personal sphere of influence agent.
Right.
There's no difference in flipping and building my database than what you guys are doing in real estate and having your database. That is now a sphere